Maboff.
This is Scammapalooza. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And if you do enjoy the podcast, why not leave a review on iTunes? Your constant validation is all that sustains me through the cold, dark night. Has anyone ever told you about the time that they got swindled and the story that they tell you is so ridiculous that you just want to grab them by the shoulders, shake them and say, "What were you thinking? Why would you do that? How could you be so gullible?" Well, my guest today has the answer. Art Maines is an author, clinical social worker, and one of the hosts of the popular Scammercast podcast. On this week's episode, Art helps explain exactly what goes on inside your brain when you get scammed and why you should cut your friend who got swindled a little slack. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. You're a psychologist by trade, is that right?
Yes, essentially that's right. I am a licensed clinical social worker, which here in the United States is a licensed mental health professional. So in my regular day job, I see a lot of clients for things like depression, anxiety, problems with their kids, problems with their boss, those sorts of life issues.
So what then got you interested in the world of con artists and scams?
It was because of a personal experience. My stepfather, who was a part of my life for longer, actually, than either of my birth parents, Bill was his name, and Bill was a very bright man. He was college educated and worked for various oil companies, and when he moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, which is my hometown, he worked for the independent school district. So this was not a stupid person. And so we fast forward then to June of 2009, when I'm out of town. I'm up in Wisconsin when I get a phone call from a woman who identified herself as a police detective in the suburb of St. Louis where Bill lived. And of course, when she said, "Do you know Bill Haney?" all my lights on my dashboard went red because I thought, oh my God, why is a police detective calling me asking about Bill? I thought maybe he'd been in an accident or something. But it turns out that she and a uniformed police officer had confronted Bill at the courtesy counter, we call them here, in the grocery store that was his favorite. It's where you would go and you'd buy a money order or buy stamps or cash a check, send money, that sort of thing. So what had happened was the employees of this store had captured an image from their security camera of Bill standing there wiring money to scammers. And when they confronted him, he didn't believe them. In fact, she told me that he used language that I had never heard Bill use in my life. So I knew that something terrible had happened to him and that the scammers really had taken control of his mind. And so what came to light over the next few days and few weeks was that Bill had fallen victim to a phony sweepstakes scam. They told him that he had won third prize in the Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes, which of course is a big sweepstakes here in the United States. So this was believable. But they told him they just needed him to send them $850 to cover taxes, fees, and security. And that was the beginning of 5 months of his getting ripped off in a scam. He was wiring to crooks overseas as much as $3,500 a day. When he told the scammers that he didn't have any more cash available to him, they coached him on how to do credit card cash advances, which was disaster on top of disaster because the interest rate on those is about three times the already sky-high interest rates, and it starts the minute he took the money out of the machine. So when we totaled everything up, he lost just over $70,000, which was about a third of his life savings. But as someone said to me, he may have lost a third of his savings, but he lost 100% of his dignity and his pride. And so this was a disaster, and I felt terrible because I felt it was my job to protect him, of course. And I thought I had done that. But the scammers are so good at their manipulative tactics and the psychology of scamming that they could corrupt the mind of a really intelligent man and get him to believe their lies and manipulation. So about a month after all this came to light, Nicholas, then I had kind of what I call my social worker epiphany, where I thought, I'm learning a lot about how to help an older person recover after one of these scams. And I thought, well, okay, I've never really considered writing a book, but maybe there's a book in here. I found once again, time and time and time again, it's so much easier and so much better to prevent this stuff than it is to clean up afterward. Called Scammed, 3 Steps to Help Your Elder Parents and Yourself. And I'm delighted because the feedback that I get is that this is the book that people wish they had had before their parent or loved one got ripped off. And that's the book I wrote. I thought, I want to write the book that I wish I had had to guide me not only in recovery, which is painful and messy, but also to think about prevention. And that dovetailed perfectly into my interest in psychology, my interest in manipulation. I have a long background in hypnosis, and there are a lot of similarities, a lot of bleed-throughs between the world of hypnosis and the world of scam and fraud, psychological manipulation. So it's a very interesting area that actually kind of fits with my passions and my interest in the field of psychotherapy.
There is very little written about what you're talking about the psychology and what actually goes on inside a victim's head at the moment that they're swindled. Can you explain why we get conned on a psychological level?
Well, I'll certainly take a stab at it. The way it comes out is, first, the manipulator typically builds rapport. This is what happened with Bill, although in recent months, we've seen a shift in the scammer's tactics away from so much rapport building and more tactics based on intimidation and forcefulness. But in terms of hypnosis, the hypnotist has to build rapport with the client. You've got to feel like this is a person that you know, like, and trust, and that seems to like you. So, for instance, with Bill, they hooked him with being friendly. He said they were the nicest people you'd ever want to talk to. They'd ask him how his day was going. They'd ask him how he was feeling, because at this point in his life, his kidneys had failed, and so he was on dialysis 3 times a week. So they'd ask him, how are you feeling after your dialysis? What did you have for lunch today? All these kinds of friend-type questions, which builds rapport and lowers the person's natural guardedness. You know, we all have, or we're supposed to have anyway, a kind of natural wariness around strangers, where we might be open to meeting them and be friendly to them, but we're not going to divulge anything of real consequence until we get to know this person. So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create the atmosphere in which they begin to create a dysfunctional, delusional reality that they create to reel the person in. Now, in my work with scam prevention, I've done almost 90 talks in the last 3 years on this subject in the U.S. and in Canada, and I hope to make it to Australia one day. Then I talk about the psychology of scamming in terms of the emotional levers that scammers trigger. And this is, again, taken right out of the world of hypnotherapy, and how they will push on certain triggers to get the person to suspend disbelief. So, for example, in the world of scammers, I give folks the outline of the 5 flags. So it's a memory device for FLAGS. And the 5 emotions that the scammers use, most of the time, there are others, but these are the main ones, are fear, loneliness, anger, greed or guilt, and sympathy. So if people understand that, then they're much more able to recognize it when it's happening and shut it down before they buy into the scammer's delusional reality. And the way they set that delusional reality up is through a process called yes sets. So the word yes and the word set. So it's a series of beliefs, a series of ideas that the scammer hypnotist gets the person to say yes to. So it's things like, is this a nice person? Yes. Do they seem to like me? Yes. Do they seem friendly? Yes. Do they seem trustworthy? Yes. Do I want to believe them because they're so nice to me? Yes. Then they spring in with, well, you know, you're so lucky you've won this prize. Or donate to our charity because it's going to help those poor, poor animals that are in such terrible shape, pulling on, you know, the sympathy lever. So it's an elaborate method that releases a person's guards and then builds in a reality of the scammer's choosing that the person buys into, because we are all wired to connect. We're social creatures, so we want to connect. And many times seniors are lonely, so they're even more primed to be able to connect more readily with the scammers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that of the flags, the majority of them are positive emotions. So sympathy and loneliness is not, but the desire for affection and connection.
Right.
And
right.
The idea of greed is certainly in there, but it's only one aspect. Can't con an honest man is really a myth.
It truly is a myth, because it's not anything to do with the person's honesty. It has to do with essentially their goodness and the normal human weaknesses that we all have. Everyone, Nicholas, has a little bit of greed in them. Who doesn't like to get a good deal at the grocery store? Or who doesn't like to get a good deal on a new car that they're buying? That's a little bit of greed. And that goes all the way up to some of the corporate CEOs, especially here in America, who can't seem to ever get enough money. And some of the big-time con artists like Bernard Madoff, who ripped off thousands of celebrities and big-name charities with a huge scam. So, you know, we're all susceptible to greed.
It's interesting you mentioned Madoff, because a lot of the people that he operated against and took money from were his friends. They were people that he had befriended and come to know socially, people from his community. He wasn't a stranger to them. And it sounds like in his case, he was definitely relying on those emotional connections that you mentioned.
That's exactly right. There is a story in the news here in the U.S. Midwest, here in St. Louis, actually, about a church pastor who ripped off members of his flock and other elders for several million dollars, again, because of the relationship ties, all of the levers of know, like, and trust that the scammer used to get people to part with their life savings in many cases. So, yes, you can con an honest man. In fact, he may be even more susceptible than someone who is maybe a little bit more skeptical about things.
It reminds me of weight loss programs where you can understand all of the things you're supposed to eat and all the exercise you're supposed to do. But if you don't really understand the emotional things that are going on, it's a lot harder.
That's exactly right.
I've been looking a little bit recently at the neurology of scams and cons and what goes on a sort of more biological level when we trust people and the role of oxytocin.
Right.
Do you know much sort of about those kind of hormones and endorphins that are released when we trust people?
Yeah, you know, oxytocin is the main one. It's the connecting hormone that gets released when we connect with someone through our eyes, through the mechanism of mirror neurons. It's when someone validates or acknowledges us. We feel heard. We feel like we have become a part of their internal roadmap, if you will. It's like, ooh, they get me. That person really gets me. And that releases that oxytocin, and it also releases a degree of dopamine, which is the pleasure chemical. It's like, ooh, that's exciting. That's really cool. So again, it suspends the critical faculty. And the other point that I make in my presentations to seniors and others about scams and everything is the way that the brain is structured and what we have found in the world of neuroscience and through neuroimaging in the last 20 years or so, that, you know, I give people the metaphor of imagining a boy or a girl on an elephant as a simple but useful metaphor for how the brain is structured. So, for example, if somebody gets that elephant to take off running, there's very little that that boy or girl can do to stop the elephant. You know, let's say it gets spooked or something like that. That boy or girl is going for a ride. Well, in our brains, the elephant refers to the much older, much larger mammalian brain, the part that's out to connect and protect us, okay? But the connection drive is so strong that the boy or the girl represents our thinking brain, our neocortex, to use the terminology of neuroscience. And so emotions have primacy because they are wired into a much larger and much older part of our brains. So If the scammers hook us with emotion, then essentially they're hijacking our elephant.
And that would explain why your stepfather was so unwilling to accept that he had been scammed and that he was being taken advantage of, because he was well and truly on the elephant rampaging.
He really was. And there's also that little bit of awareness somewhere in the background that, oh my God, this is really happening. I can't believe that it's happening. I don't want to admit that it's happening. But it's psychological defenses. We don't want to face an unpleasant truth, so therefore, we'll fight it, we will deny it, we will do everything in our power, even as a part of us, most of the time, is starting to realize, oh my God, I've been ripped off.
What would you do as a psychologist to, if you're presented with someone who's on the runaway elephant, who completely believes and there's no amount of logic or reason is ever going to bring them around?
Well, I have adapted the intervention model from substance abuse treatment for use with seniors who are in the midst of a huge denial problem about getting ripped off. And so what we look at is, how do we build a team of people around them, again, using the leverage of relationships in a positive sense, collecting perhaps their financial advisor, their doctor, their pastor, whoever is around them that is someone that they hold in high regard and respect, to come and talk to this person and present this to them. Sometimes it's a police officer, as in Bill's case. It was a police detective and a uniformed police officer who confronted him. Now, at first, he didn't want to believe it, but it broke through the denial and ultimately led to him realizing that that happened. So it's about the relationship, and then it's about gradually allowing the person to come to see this while preserving as much of their dignity as you can, because the tendency will be, oh my God, I'm so stupid. How could I let this happen? What's wrong with me? It raises fears that maybe they're in cognitive impairment, that sort of thing.
I read a book recently called You're Just Too Good to Be True, which is a Penguin special that came out. It's just a sort of a short essay on romance scams. And it talks about a man also named Bill, but who'd been involved in a romance swindle. And at the start of the book, we meet him, and he's already been scammed. He's lost his life savings. He's trying to put his life back together again. He's going to support groups. He meets regularly with the police. And yet, as he's talking to the writer about his experiences, he admits that he still keeps in touch with the scammers and is thinking about sending them more money. So even though he knows that he has been scammed and he knows that he's not going to get his money back, logically and rationally, there is a part of him that still wants to stay in connection with those people. And it reminds me, I mean, really of an abusive relationship of someone who has been emotionally or physically abused by their spouse and yet goes back to them and tries to defend them.
It's the loss of the dream that's so hard for people who are getting scammed to really come to grips with, whether it's the dream of great riches or just relief from some financial burdens, or in the case of the romance scam, it's the dream of finding love again in life. You know, perhaps they've lost a spouse or they've been divorced for a long time and they're lonely. It's the loss of the dream that's very, very hard for people to admit and ultimately grieve.
Most of your work is with older people, so you sort of deal mostly with elder fraud. Is there something specific about older people and the way in which they are scammed as opposed to the rest of the population?
Well, I focus on that area in part because of the unique vulnerabilities of older people. It's also because people over 50 in the United States control 70% of the nation's wealth. So that's where the money is, and that's why scammers target older people. And the vulnerabilities could include things like perhaps some sort of early cognitive impairment. For instance, on the Scammer Cast, you may have noticed we had a woman from the Alzheimer's Foundation who talked about cognitive impairment. So I don't think anybody should be ripped off because their brain isn't working right. It could be something not related to a dementia-type illness. It could be that they're on medication that impairs them temporarily. It could be something as simple as dehydration or an infection. With older people, they're more susceptible to these kinds of things that can impair their judgment. Another way that they're vulnerable is the loneliness factor. A lot of seniors are disconnected from workplace social connections. Maybe they don't attend a church or other religious community. Maybe some of their friends have died, so there's the loneliness factor, which of course was present with Bill. There's also a tendency they're finding in some of the research into why people get scammed toward different kinds of thinking errors, or what they call cognitive biases. For example, a big one that I talk about is the overconfidence bias. People of a certain age think, oh, well, I'm too smart for that. You know, I've done all these things and I manage my money. I can't get ripped off. When in fact, that's when they're most at risk.
I met a man who's a quadriplegic at a seminar, and we were talking about elder fraud and also fraud against people with disabilities. And he said that right. He felt as if it wasn't always necessarily that older people were more trusting, that he found that he had to trust people more. He had no choice. As he'd lost a lot of independence, it meant that he had to trust people on a regular basis, and it meant that, you know, if someone was to try and scam him, he'd be much more likely to believe them.
We see that a lot in the world of elder financial abuse and exploitation. Could be someone with diminishing eyesight, maybe with mobility issues, and they're forced to trust people that are supposed to be trustworthy. But, you know, there's a lot of instances of caregivers that have the senior sign a different will, changing the beneficiary on things to that caregiver, right down to things like they take the person to the local, well, here it'd be Walmart, you know, a big department store or something, and they get the cash back option, and the caregiver will help themselves to that extra 20 or 30 or 50 bucks. So yeah, absolutely. They're put into that position of having to trust people in order to just conduct their everyday life. So it's a real source of vulnerability.
I've read a few suggestions that older people come from a generation in which you did trust people. To me, I don't know. I know a lot of older people who don't think that way at all, and are quite naturally suspicious. Do you think that older people are sort of, they come from a different generation when you used to trust people more, or is that just us being nostalgic for an imaginary better time?
No, I believe that's absolutely true. In one of the videos on my book website at scammedbook.com, Bill makes that point. He said, I came from an era and an area where people trusted each other. I mean, your word was your bond. A handshake sealed a deal. People didn't lock their houses. They didn't lock their cars. And we refer to that as being from the gentleman's generation or the ladies' generation, where people were much more geared toward honor, toward honesty and trustworthiness. I mean, there were still scammers around. There were still con artists. But it was mainly confined to the big cities where, you know, you might catch someone doing three-card Monty or something like that. But with the advent of the internet and telecommunications, it has opened up vast pools of potential victims for the scammers. And that's one of the points that I make in my presentations, is that it's time to rethink some of these assumptions about relationships. Like you identified, give people the benefit of the doubt. That's a big one that keeps victims stuck in that crime. Another one is don't think bad of people. Always try to find the good in people. All of these things, which are lovely on the surface, and we wish that we lived in a world where those were still as valid as they were 50 years ago, but sadly, we don't live in that world anymore. And so a lot of folks have never really considered that they need to change their thinking now, and perhaps not be so trusting. And it goes against their grain because that's how they were raised. So, yeah, I think you're right on, Nicholas.
Previously, our community, the people that we saw on a regular basis and that we were exposed to, would be people who were in our specific geographic region. You mentioned, you know, obviously people in the cities are the ones you can't trust. And so you sort of have these little middle class ghettos of people where everyone is the same and everyone knows each other. And even right. If you don't know them, well, they're from the same background as you, so you can probably trust them. Whereas now, because right. of the internet, we're being exposed to people from different countries. You can't trust them in the same way as you necessarily could before. That sounded quite racist.
Right on that line. Yeah, that's exactly it. And I mean, you know, for example, Bill was getting ripped off at the end of his scam by crooks from Costa Rica, Jamaica, and Canada, wiring money to these various places, because once he fell in with one group of scammers, then they sold his information to other scammers.
Hmm.
And he was just getting worked three different ways and probably more that I didn't even know about.
I have a friend who is constantly getting people calling him and trying to scam him. And it's because he once signed up for a, I think it was a dodgy SEO company offering to promote his bookshop website. And because of that, he's just constantly getting these calls and he doesn't know why. And I don't want to tell him it's because you were a sucker in the past that they they want to take advantage of you in the future. And I keep saying, just hang up. No, don't try and argue with them. Just hang up.
Right.
You know, don't stay on the line. Just hang up. But he likes a good fight.
You know, I have some great stories. There was this one lady that I was in the audience at one of my presentations, and she came up to me afterwards, and I always appreciate the stories that come after the presentation because they're usually great. So there was this one lady that came up and she said, I got a call from some guy and he started his spiel and I said, young man, is this a sex call? And he said, oh, no, ma'am. And she said, well, that's the only kind I take.
Have you thought much about you think a lot about the psychology of the victims. Have you ever thought much about the psychology of the con artists themselves and what's going on inside their heads?
Yeah, I cover that a bit in my book. You know, there's almost no research on the actual psychopathology of a scam artist. But we can say with reasonable certainty that many of them fall into the category of sociopath, someone who is lacking in conscience and views their victims as simply marks, dupes, or fools. And they oriented inside themselves to, well, they had it coming. They deserved it. So there's a lot of that. They are criminals. Some of them are probably people who are trying to make a living in a very hostile environment. But most of them are cold, hard criminals who really don't care about their victims. They don't see them as people. One of the brightest names in the world of psychology, Aaron Beck, one of the guys that founded cognitive behavioral therapy, wrote a marvelous book called Prisoners of Hate. And he talks about how they objectify their victims. They've been desensitized to any sort of human concern about them. And they just view them as their source of the next amount of money they're going to get. So, yeah, it's frightening and chilling, but there's some real ugly stuff going on there.
One of the themes that we keep coming back to on the podcast is that the con artists are scamming themselves as well, and that a lot of them have ended up believing their own story. Is that something that you've sort of come across on a psychological level, that kind of self-delusion?
Well, definitely more in the world of financial abuse and exploitation, because they will create an elaborate self-delusion that says, well, this is what mom or dad would want. They would want me to have this money. They would want me to have it now. And that's how they justify stealing from their own parent or grandparent. They set it up through elaborate entitlement schemes like, well, I deserve this because I've had a hard life. Mm. Or I deserve this because someone was mean to me in my childhood, maybe the person that they're victimizing right now. So there's a lot of that self-delusion. And I think probably true among the scammers as well, the sort of criminal types. But I see that more among those who abuse or exploit elders financially. They just create all these elaborate justifications for why what they're doing is perfectly fine, when in fact they're committing a crime.
I guess being a carer is an extraordinarily difficult job to take on with its own stresses. And so you can understand people feeling a sense of resent. You can almost see it, I guess, in some cases as a type of revenge. Mm-hmm. They're making my life difficult, so I'm going to take this money.
Right, right. And you know, they may have had a difficult relationship with that parent years before or all for all their entire life. And you're right. I mean, they will look at it as a kind of revenge tactic, like, well, I'm getting mine now. So, yeah, there's all sorts of elaborate justifications for what boils down to just a crime.
Just got very depressing.
It's a fact of life, unfortunately.
Aside from obviously the speaking and the writing and the podcast, are you interested in doing any research on the subject of elder fraud yourself?
Yeah, I would love to be more involved in research in some form. I've yet to find the time or the money to do that. I began a research effort several years ago where I created a whole separate email account. And whenever I would get one of these sketchy emails, I would respond and I would say, you know, I'm doing research into this world, and I would like to know how you got into this field. How did you get into this type of crime? And I never got an answer, but I thought it would be interesting sort of qualitative research to get a sense of the stories behind the scammers, to find out what happened. Why did you do this? Not that a sociopath would ever tell me that, or if they did, it'd probably be a lie, but there are probably others around them who would have quite a story to tell, but it never went anywhere.
There's a great documentary called The Sakowa Boys, which I've mentioned before on the podcast, which is about Ghanaian con artists. And a lot of them talk about the reason why they feel like it's okay to do this job. And from the African perspective, they justify it by saying that because the West had taken all of its natural resources and left it in devastation, that it's okay for them to then scam people in these countries as a way of getting the money back again.
Wow, isn't that interesting? So I definitely want to check that documentary out. And that's what I've heard in Jamaica as well, that it's not so much based on colonialism, but there is a whole culture there that believes that they are entitled to this, that this is a way for them to make money when there are no other opportunities to do it. A postal inspector here in the United States told me that scamming elders is one of the pillars of the Jamaican economy, along with agriculture and hospitality. So it's a huge business. I mean, the total losses for American seniors in a recent year was on the order of $36 billion.
Jamaica is not a country that I associate with scammers. I obviously always think of Ghana, Nigeria, even Spain, but not Jamaica. Is there a reason why Jamaica has latched onto it?
Well, part of it is that the Caribbean has an area code which looks very much like an area code you'd find in the continental United States. And so people don't have any kind of warning raised when they see this number showing up on their caller ID. They just think, oh, it must be somebody's cell phone or something like that. So it doesn't raise any suspicions there. It's close to the United States, so it's easy for their money mules to fly to Miami or wherever, pick up a load of cash and bring it back to the island. It's proximity, it's culture, it is that beneficial area code which sort of covers for them. So it's a lot of that sort of stuff. But, you know, there's a town in Romania where they have the most active Western Union office in the entire world. So there's a ton of scam money that's coming into this little town in Romania because that's the local business. That's what people do. So it's all over Central and Eastern Europe. It's all over Asia, the Caribbean Basin, Canada even. I mean, it's a worldwide network. It's probably cartels and syndicates. I mean, in the United States, for example, this has just come out in the last month or so, urban street gangs are getting into tax fraud and identity theft of U.S. Social Security numbers because it's far more lucrative and less dangerous than running drugs.
Yes. I was talking to James Munton a few weeks ago, who's a fraud speaker out of Dallas, and he's saying that we were talking about how meth heads are getting involved in identity theft because it's much easier than doing breaking and entering. And so it's definitely a burgeoning industry.
It really is.
I guess then that means there's still going to be plenty more episodes of Scammercast then to come.
I sure hope so. Yeah, we've got lots of ideas and lots of potential episodes.
Well, before I let you go, I have one more question. And this is, since you know about scams and you obviously know about psychology, can you explain to me why people spend $30 on mindfulness coloring in books? Have you seen these things?
I have.
I don't understand.
Part of it is mindfulness is very hot right now. It's a very hot topic. It's very popular. I mean, I get emails virtually every day about mindfulness training this and mindfulness training that. And there's a lot of benefit in it. I mean, I think it's a fabulous practice. You know, the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn and Jack Kornfield and all these people, Tara Brach, you know, these are great people, and it's a fabulous technique. A mindfulness coloring book, it's, first of all, and it's an excuse for adults to do something that they probably wanted to do for a long time, but now they have a real reason. Oh, it's my mindfulness coloring book, so it's okay. So it's the genius of capitalism, I think, at work here, Nicholas. If we call it mindfulness, we make it sort of pretty, and we call it a coloring book, we can sell it for about three times the actual price.
And on a completely unrelated note from selling products, if people want to find out more about you and your products, your book, the podcast, all of the things, they can go to scammedbook.com.
Right. That's the book website, scammedbook.com. And then they can also find us at scammercast.com. That's our podcast. Please go to iTunes and leave us a review.
Yes. Palooza. I guess I should also tell people they should go and rate and review Scammapalooza as well.
Well, that's it. And you know, I'm a huge fan of Scammapalooza, and I've got more of your episodes to listen to.
As always, you can find out more at conman.com.au. This has been Scammapalooza.